This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with two senior students at the University of Illinois, Rachel White-Domain and Ashley Moore. Ashley is involved with an organization called Libertas that we'll be learning about in just a minute. But let's start out with Rachel, who's involved with Amnesty International. Rachel, how did you first get interested in some of the issues that Amnesty is concerned with?
That's a good question. I got interested in issues of human rights after reading the newspaper, and when I was in grade school and junior high, I had to read the newspaper for assignments, and it was amazing to me to learn or to realize, and it was a slow realization, how much of a privilege Americans enjoy in terms of the human rights that we enjoy here in the U.S., and in terms of the rights that we enjoy even when we travel in other countries. And I realized very young that this is not a right that everyone enjoys. And I felt that having this privilege as an American, I also had a responsibility. I also had a duty. And that duty was to use my privilege to raise my voice for those who do not share those same privileges, and to work for a world in which all of us share human rights.
Now, you mentioned that when you were in school earlier, you had assignments where you needed to read the papers and find out what was going on around the world. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up actually in Pennsylvania, just north of Pennsylvania in Abington Township. And I went to school for a while out there. I also briefly went to school in Illinois. And then moved back to Pennsylvania and, of course, moved back here to Champaign, where I live right now, to go to high school. So I went to several different schools when I was younger, and maybe I didn't appreciate the time doing the homework, but definitely appreciate now looking back my teachers who encouraged me to really have a knowledge of what's going on in the world. I think that's really important to have even at that age.
Well, which high school did you go to in Champaign-Urbana?
In Champaign-Urbana, I went to Urbana High School.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what do you study at the University of Illinois?
At the University of Illinois right now, I am majoring in sociology, and I'll actually be graduating this coming weekend here. I also minored in political science.
And Ashley Moore, what got you involved in some of the issues that Libertas is concerned with?
Libertas' main issue is to raise awareness against human trafficking, and actually the way I came into that was when I came here to the University of Illinois, I, of course, wanted to make a difference and did feel passionately about human rights, and it was actually a friend that got me interested in the actual issue because it was something I'd never heard of before, and when she brought this to my attention that people were living in slavery today, I instantly thought if people knew more about it, they could do more to help it. And that's when I really took off with becoming involved in Libertas and trying to spread the message. So,
and where are you from originally?
I grew up in Lansing, Illinois. It's a suburb south of Chicago.
And what have you studied at the university?
I'm double majoring in international studies and political science, and I've also done my best to learn Spanish. And I'll be hopefully walking the stage this weekend with Rachel, so...
Very good. Now, when you talk about human trafficking, human slavery today, is this something that happens in this country as well as other places in the world?
Yes, it's actually a big part. It's a very international issue. It has also happened in the United States. It is happening right now. And human trafficking basically is when people are held against their will, either through threats of force or by withholding of documents. They're made to stay in situations that they do not willingly consent to. And in the United States, you can see this happening in situations where labor is not compensated properly, and that can be done in either like factory settings or even homes with domestic servitude, and in cases of sexual trafficking where people are forced.
Now, are people who are susceptible to this kind of force, do they tend to be immigrants?
Generally, It can be anyone that doesn't understand the situation they're getting into. I would say as a whole that would be because people are interested in the opportunities that the United States has to provide and would consent more willingly. But
I think there should also, I agree with you. You make really good points. I think it's also, it's a lot of times immigrants, it's probably important to say that they're people that, as you had said, don't understand the situation, but they're also people who our society has taken power away from or taken from them the ability to protest or to speak out against their condition. So, for example, it may be that they're threatened with deportation, or it may be that they're threatened with the possibility of not being able to make even any money at all, even if they're making starvation wages. So I think that it's important to focus on the structural things that create that lack of power that get people into these terrible situations. It's not just individual people that are imprisoning people, although it does clearly happen quite often. It's also the power dynamics within our society that tend to underprivilege certain people, and those are the people who we see definitely being at risk for sex trafficking and also labor abuses.
Now, Rachel, you're involved with Amnesty, and I know there's an overlap between the concerns of these two groups, and that's why it seemed like a good combination to have on the radio show today. Let me encourage listeners, since this is a live call-in show every week here on WILL AM 580. Let me give the phone numbers where listeners may call in with a comment or a question. We're eager to have folks join our conversation. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. Anywhere else the program is heard, if it's a long-distance call for you, do call us at 1-800-222-9455. So if you're listening in this long distance call, use the 1-800-222-WILL, and that includes listeners on the internet. If you're listening at WILL.UIUC.edu, do feel free to use the toll free number. And I see we have a caller on line number one. Let's go to local line one. Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. My question, I know the word amnesty means forgiveness, but can Rachel say more about that, please? Because it's difficult to forgive. I know it's very, very important to forgive, but one cannot forget. Can you say something about that, please?
Yes, I can. And maybe on a personal note, this is not off of any Amnesty official handbook or website. But I think that when we talk about forgiving, we tend to think of ourselves as giving something to somebody else. And I think that it's important to remember that when we forgive, we get a lot. We are the stronger person. We learn to be the stronger person. We achieve a sense of peace inside of ourselves. And so I think that working with Amnesty, more, applying that more generally to my work with Amnesty International, I hope and I sincerely hope that through my work thus far and in my future, I will be able to help a lot of people. But I also look forward to, and I know already, that what I've achieved most from my work with Amnesty and from with other nonprofit groups is something for myself. It's a sense of pride, a sense of belonging, and just the experience of working with some of these people that we say and often enough in common language that we're helping. We really are getting a lot more than we a lot of times take the time to realize. And so I think that that would be the connection there between forgiveness and helping, the helping relationship.
Let's follow up that. Thank you, caller, for that that question, that point. Rachel, let me follow up a little bit more to get a broader picture of what some of the things that Amnesty is concerned with internationally. It is called Amnesty International. Tell us why.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's called Amnesty International because with Amnesty, those of us that are members of Amnesty see ourselves as citizens of the world. We think that it's important to not only look at the problems that are happening in our backyard, and there are many, and I don't want to de-emphasize that at all and say that America's a perfect country, but also not to close our eyes to the abuses that are happening all over the world, and not to close our eyes to our role in those abuses or to the role of simply being silent while abuses are going on in other parts of the world, to overuse a already overused phrase, it is a small world. And I don't think that someone who is either a different color or speaks a different language or is just physically far away from us is any less deserving of our help.
When you talk about silence being a problem, why is that a problem?
Silence is a problem because the worst abuses happen where there's silence. One of the things that Amnesty International works or does a lot of is letter writing campaigns. And the theory behind letter writing campaigns is that it's very easy for a government institution or any other body to abuse people when nobody says anything about it. And those governments and those institutions know that. And so what we see is that when we do letter writing campaigns, and by that I mean Amnesty will publicize an abuse. So, for example, if someone is taken prisoner based on their religious beliefs or tortured based on their beliefs or based on maybe peaceful demonstrations that they've taken part in, Amnesty will publicize as much information as they can possibly gather about this person and encourage people all over the world to write letters to the government or to the captors of this person. And they've found that this is a really effective way. Just by shedding light, just by not being silent and speaking up on this issue, we can achieve real results for those people who are imprisoned or otherwise being abused.
And so the name Amnesty, which our caller mentions, means forgiveness.
Yes.
It's often people who are part of this group who are advocating, who are lobbying, who are trying to put pressure through letter writing and other ways to get usually governments,
yes,
to forgive people who are
to forgive. And I think it may be a little bit misleading, because by saying forgiveness, we don't necessarily mean that we are agreeing that that person has done anything wrong. So
okay.
I want to make that distinction. But Amnesty International, being called Amnesty International because originally and at our core, we're interested in or we're working towards prisoners of conscience, in other words, people who have been in prison because of their beliefs, and trying to get them to be forgiven, in other words, released by the governments or by their captors.
And freed. We're talking with Rachel White-Domain from Amnesty International and also with Ashley Moore from Libertas, two local groups. These are two seniors at the University of Illinois, about to graduate in a week or so. They're facing exams, I know, this week, final exams, the final exams. So we appreciate you taking time to be on the program to talk
sure.
about these important issues. Ashley, let's talk a little bit more about the meaning of Libertas. Why? Where did that name come from?
Libertas is actually from the derivative Latin liber for freedom or justice. And the way that we selected that name is that would be the ultimate goal, of course, in these situations of trafficking, is to help these people get their freedom back, and not just freedom in a physical sense, but also a freedom of conscience and a new perspective, being able to see themselves as independent from their captors. So it's a lot of recovery and rehabilitation.
Now, Amnesty International is an international group, and the local chapter is one chapter of a larger group. Libertas is a sort of a standalone organization, isn't it? Although there are other groups in other parts of this country and internationally that are involved with the same issue.
Yes, we are an independent group. We do our best to be a part of other organizations on this campus. I know that we've teamed up with Amnesty for some letter writing, but we like to keep our own agenda. At this stage, we're really concerned with raising awareness on this campus. We would like for students to walk out of here with an idea, at least, of what it is. And from that, we're working to take action in the things like letter writing campaigns. And we were actually fortunate enough to be able to host a speaker on our campus just recently named Beatrice Fernando, who spoke of her experience as actually a victim of human trafficking. She was forced into domestic servitude, and we had a large turnout. We had about 160 people that came to hear her story and hear her say what could help. So it was really powerful, and people are very supportive.
And so part of your mission in Libertas is education?
Yes. Education, we believe, is the first part to making a bigger impact. And we also look to, with our fundraisers or any sort of financial activity we do, is we try to donate to organizations who are there assisting these victims in the recovery efforts rather than a large, we try and target it down to somebody who's actually right there next to the people.
Now, how many people are actually involved in Libertas locally?
Involved locally, we have about 8 or 10 dedicated members that we see weekly at our meetings. But we have been seeing a larger turnout when we host bigger events. We've had movie screenings where we've had 70 people come, and we do have a large mailing list of about 50 people who are interested in being kept up to date.
Now, since this is a registered student organization here at the University of Illinois, tell our listeners who may not know what that means.
What being a registered student group means pretty much is that we have a responsibility to the university and to ourselves to hold a very tight organization. We have elected officers, and we also are constantly reevaluating our mission statements. If we look for funding in any sense, we present our event and the purpose and mission. So I think it very much keeps us on track and very, it's easier to work with other groups knowing that we're coming from the same viewpoint.
And in a sense, you're competing with some of these other groups in order to get some common money, right, that's available to student organizations. You have to plead your case and say why your speakers might be more important than somebody else who wants to bring in a speaker that costs X amount of money.
And it makes you work for it. It makes you really think, why does Beatrice Fernando need to be here today? And it's actually more of a help than a hindrance thus far. I mean, the university really does look for your true purpose, and when they see it, they're very generous to help you with it. So,
and it's other students who serve on that committee that decides which of the student groups gets
yes.
funding.
Yes, right. The SORF board.
So the fact that the groups like ours get money, I think, says a lot for where the hearts and minds of our fellow students are. I think that means that they're in the right place.
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
But there are hundreds of student organizations, so the fact that your groups have been so successful shows that that you're well organized.
Hopefully.
Thank you.
It shows we have dedicated people in our group, like Ashley. And she had mentioned just having, 8 or 10 people come to her meetings. And I think that's really fabulous. I love working with small groups like that because I know that everybody on my team is really dedicated. And when you've got groups that small and you can put on events that big, like with Beatrice coming, it's just astounding how much work such a small group of people can get done.
Now, Rachel, tell us, as a senior, you're about to graduate, how have you balanced this kind of social action, this kind of being involved in an organization like this that's separate from your schoolwork? How have you balanced doing it?
That's a good question. It is difficult to balance sometimes, mostly because I get so excited about working with groups like Amnesty and working with student groups in general that I find it hard to tear away and spend some time on my schoolwork. But I've been really fortunate in that with my major in sociology and my minor in political science, I feel like there's a lot of overlap between the work that I'm doing both inside and outside of the classroom. I think I've been able to relate really well, learning about issues in my sociology classes that I can apply to my work with Amnesty and vice versa. And I think that my work with Amnesty, if anything, hasn't competed but rather enriched my experience at the university. I encourage all university students to really get involved with student groups because I think that that was really a lot of times the heart of my university college experience was being involved in extracurricular groups. I think you learn something doing that, and Ashley's agreeing with
definitely,
me.
Definitely.
Something you learn something that you can't learn inside the classroom. You learn really a sense of power. You learn a lot about getting involved, a lot about your own power and the power of your colleagues and your community to really make things happen. And that's something I think you'll be able to apply in your future work no matter where you go.
And obviously you've both learned communication skills.
Hopefully. Listeners can comment on that one.
Ashley was talking earlier about a speaker that Libertas has brought to campus. So what about Amnesty?
Amnesty, actually, just recently, the Women's Rights Committee hosted a Stop Violence Against Women Activists Conference, and we had a wonderful speaker, Amanda Flott, who is a field organizer with Amnesty International USA Midwest office come down from Chicago and give a wonderful speech, a presentation of a new report they released called Maze of Injustice, which can actually be found on the Amnesty website.
What is the Amnesty website?
It's www.amnesty.org, amnesty.org, and you can look that up. And it's about the recent report about sexual violence against Native American and Alaskan Native women here in the U.S. And what they found, one of the many things they found in this report, is that violence against Native American, Alaskan Native women is at least 2.5 times as high as sexual assault against other women here in the U.S., which is already, as our listeners probably know, a very high and terrifying number. So she came down and spoke, and she was Ms. Flatt was just fabulous. She also ran a workshop, Grassroots Organizing 101, which is really exciting. We also had Dr. Karen Flynn, who's joined us. She's actually a professor here at the University of Illinois, and gave a talk on sex trafficking, making the global connection. And she was really good, and we were really happy to have her.
It was really an amazing conference I attended, and I was just blown away at how well organized and the message, how clear and concise all the messages were. It was a great experience.
How many students attended that conference?
On our sign-up, we actually had a sign-up sheet, and I think that we missed a lot of people because the folks at the registration table were coming in to see the speakers because they were so exciting. But we had about 40 people sign in, and I think we had a few more people than that were sort of in and out throughout the day.
When you bring in speakers like this, is the community invited too, usually?
Always invited. And we try to do outreach to the community as much as possible. It's sometimes difficult for student groups to do outreach to the community, but we do the best we can. And the community is definitely always invited to our events.
Yeah, Libertas works really hard to try and get the word out fast and try and get it to local papers that anyone can be accessed.
And I think that enriches, actually, the experience that the students have at the conferences or at any event, to have community members there that maybe have different experiences than us students have, to come and share in events like that, share their own experiences, their own knowledge. It's really a benefit for the students, so I always encourage community members to come out.
And for community members who'd like to join this conversation on the radio today, do call us. Don't be shy. The number anywhere the program is heard, if it's a long-distance call, is 1-800-222-9455. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines that can be accessed by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Anywhere else, 1-800-222-9455. And incidentally, if listeners have missed the first part of this program for one reason or another, and would like to hear it, these programs are archived at the website for WILL. That's WILL.UIUC.edu. Go to AM and then check out Keeping the Faith, and you'll see these programs listed, and you can hear this program or other programs that have been broadcast that you might have missed. Just find them by going to that website. I see we do have another caller on our local line. Let's go to line number one.
Yes, I called before, but I wanted to ask, what is the sense of power? You talked about the sense of power. I'll hang up and listen to your answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you for calling again. Also a very good question. Sense of power. By sense of power, I mean that, and maybe I'll refer back to some comments that Ashley and I had made earlier about how dynamics in power, or more specifically, when we have groups of people who are disempowered in our society, those people's rights can be very easily abused. And so when I talk about sense of power, I'm not talking about power to dominate. I'm talking about power to be part of the dialogue, that is to say, power to demand your basic human rights in our society. And I think very often in our society, groups are silenced. Groups are not permitted to exercise that power, the power of the people, the power of the people to become involved in grassroots organizing, and to demand demand their rights. So, for example, we could talk about the Immokalee workers, and Amnesty International hosted the Immokalee workers earlier last semester. The Immokalee workers are a group of immigrant Spanish-speaking monolingual workers in Florida who pick tomatoes for a very, very low wage and sell these tomatoes to some of the hugest corporations in America, including McDonald's, Taco Bell, and Burger King. And so when I talk about power, I'm talking about the amazing struggle of this group to demand the power back from these companies who have historically been denying them a wage that allows them to do basic things like pay the rent and have enough to eat and feed their children. So I talk about power. I talk about groups like that being able to stand up on their own two feet and say, as a human being, I deserve the basic right to a wage that I can eat and live on.
We're about halfway through our program, Keeping the Faith, this afternoon on WILL AM 580, a radio service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Of course, this is a listener-supported radio station, and we are always very grateful for listeners who have made contributions to help public radio continue. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. Brett Polson is our technical director, and we are eager to have people call in with comments or questions. Please feel free to do that on our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455, or in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University of Illinois. It happens that both Amnesty International and Libertas are programs of the University of Illinois, YMCA. We're delighted to have such able students as our two guests on the program today, providing leadership for those programs. The Y is the oldest student organization, oldest continuous student organization at the University of Illinois. It was founded in 1873, and the Y tries to develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action, for community service, and the students whose voices you hear today are wonderful examples of that. These are two seniors about to graduate. One of the Y programs before they graduate, just barely, is the collection time for Dump and Run. That oddly named program takes things that students often leave behind when they take off from campus that they've accumulated over the year or several years, and as they're graduating or leaving for the summer, maybe don't fit into their cars or trucks or U-Hauls, and typically get thrown in dumpsters. And the Y has a number of student programs that are concerned with the environment and with recycling. And we have this huge recycling program where we encourage students to bring to the Y those things that are still useful to someone else. This next week, we start tomorrow. So anytime this week or in the next couple, we encourage students and other people in the community to bring still useful furniture, household goods, kitchenware, clothes, books, CDs, anything that you're tired of, almost will take. We don't want computer monitors. We don't want large appliances, but almost everything else we'll take. If you have any questions, do call the Y, 337-1500 in area code 217. Starting tomorrow, there'll be huge cardboard boxes, 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet, scattered all around campus with big green signs on them saying, put stuff in here, too. And we have volunteers, students, and others who'll be going around and picking those up and bringing them to the huge huge tractor trailer that we fill up these next few weeks. Last year, we collected, I think, 5 full tractor trailer loads of things that then we sell in the fall. And we make some money for the Y, help our programs, support our programs. And new students who are coming in, particularly international students, find these items very useful. So no sleeper sofas, but any other kind of sofa or chairs or other furniture, all those things, do consider giving them to the Y this week. We'll also have a collection time in August. So if some people who are listening can't get things done this week or before the next couple weeks, August 14 to 21 we'll be collecting again out at the Stock Pavilion where we have this huge sale in the fall. The sale will actually start August 23rd. But for a couple weeks before that, we'll also be collecting out there. Well, let's get back to our guests here in the studio today. We're very happy to have Ashley Moore and Rachel White Domain. Ashley, tell me a little bit about how your organization is organized. What's the structure? How do things happen?
Well, I like to think that everybody that comes to our meetings is so committed. Actually, as far as leadership, I think that we've always had several people heading the reins. One of my fellow students, Elizabeth Lindner, has also been in the group since its foundation, so we're always kind of there to lend a word and help. And Tara Williams will be our president next year. She's also been very involved in the group, and Monica Rossia. These four girls are pretty much like, we keep everything running, but everybody helps out. With a group that size, it's quite evident that everybody is helping by the events we're able to have.
Now, when the group got started, were you around?
Yes. We were founded in 2003 on this campus, and actually, Kelsey Buchanan, she was the main ringleader. She wanted this to happen, and Elizabeth and I helped her with that goal. That first year, we had around 12 members, and since then, we've graduated some people and have some new ones come on. So,
and how did the group get affiliated with the University YMCA?
We applied for the YMCA because we viewed this as a big human rights issue, and we also saw that it was, while Amnesty does an excellent job of covering international issues, we saw where this was something that could be focused on year-round, and that raising awareness for it would prove to be a full-time job.
And what advantages were there with this student group getting involved with the Y?
I know that it's been a tremendous, tremendous help, everything to us. It's a great resource. It helps us get involved with other student groups. It's a great meeting place. I could go on the whole show about how great it's been. Everything from like Xeroxes to phone calls to fax machines to friends, it's a really strong base for a program. And I know just working with Amnesty has helped us so much, and that's just one example. And
well, let's switch to Amnesty a bit. It's an organization that's been around a lot longer with a broader concern. But do you know much about how it began?
I don't know how we got involved with the YMCA.
Okay.
Actually, perhaps
it's been a long time.
You
I
do.
Know.
It was way before my time.
Right.
Just speaking to that, Amnesty really has found a home with the YMCA. We feel at home there, and I've only been involved with Amnesty comparatively recently, just for about a year now. But I can say that we are always at the YMCA, and it's nice just to have a place to sort of touch base with such a huge university. A lot of times I feel like, as an individual and also as part of this this group, you feel like, you know, you don't really have like a home base at the University YMCA, and it's nice just to have somewhere to go and, you know, keep your flyers and know that you can leave, you know, post messages and things like that there. But I also want to say that the University YMCA staff has just been fabulous in terms of helping us and supporting us. I know I'm always in there asking how to use the copy machine or how to do this or that or how to fax or how to phone or how to, you know, do whatever it is that we need in the front desk, and the folks upstairs are just always ready to help us do whatever it is that we need to do. And it's, yeah.
With a smile, too, right?
It's
really refreshing.
It's really refreshing. And also the attitude. I feel like the University YMCA really provides a safe and supportive place for student organizations that are involved in the kind of progressive work that we're involved in. And it's really nice just to have that emotional support there, that we're not the only crazy people out there that think we can, you know, just go off and change the world one day. And, you know, I really feel like that emotional support has also just been really valuable to Amnesty and to me personally.
What do you see characterizes a progressive organization?
I think that a progressive organization, the political definition would probably some a group that leans to the left, a group that is more interested in, I would say, human freedom than economic freedom, I think is the way it's sometimes referred to, perhaps misleadingly. But I would probably say that progressive means that when you determine what work you should be doing in the world, or you determine what your truths are with a lowercase t. You listen to the people's voices that are maybe not listened to so often, and you try to find in your heart which ones are really telling you the true story of what's happening in this world, and you believe them. I think that a lot of times we tend to think that we have the right answers. And I, Dr. Karen Flynn, actually referring back to the woman that I mentioned earlier who came and spoke with the with at the Stop Violence Against Women activist conference just the other week, said that said something really fantastic. She said that, you know, other people don't need you to tell them when they're oppressed. They know when they're oppressed. It's your job to listen to them. And I would want to add and to act on that and to act on that. That belief. So when I think of a progressive organization, I think of an organization that has their ear to the ground, that is listening to the voices that are sometimes silenced, that is listening to the people's voices, and not second-guessing them.
Rachel, as a college senior, looking back on your education so far, where did your values come from?
I think that I was probably really lucky. I'm lucky to be able to say that my values, I think, come from my family. Were definitely enhanced by my education and definitely informed and matured during my, my college and high school education. But I think that, you know, my dad has always been really a guiding light for me. He's always helped me to listen to my own heart and to follow the beat of my own drum. And so I'm grateful for that.
And Ashley, how would you answer that question? You're also a senior. Where did your values get formed?
Wow. I would also have to say my family. They've really been a tremendous, they've always been my biggest cheerleaders, while I've always been my toughest critic. And I'd have to say that they showed me the world. And I'm really grateful that they showed me what it turned out to me to be the most important parts of it that I started looking at once I came to school here. So I would say back to my parents and my grandparents, spent a lot of time with them.
Now, you've been in at a very large state university, a secular university. Some people would use other terms, but even less neutral than those. How have you found your professors? There's this professors here from all over the world who come from all different kinds of experiences, all different kind of cultures, all different kind of values. Have you found this mixing bowl, this salad bowl, an interesting place to be, or a challenging place, or both?
I found it to be very interesting. Just so much information from so many different sources, it really, you know, there's a lot out there, and I'm kind of glad that I didn't cut myself off from that experience. I think it actually helped me to center myself more. And as far as coming here and the environment, I don't think I could have learned more in 4 years being anywhere else, so I think it was great.
Yeah, I felt like it was really huge, but I think that I always felt grounded maybe more because of where I'm coming from than from where I was at the university itself. I think that I was also really lucky to be part of the sociology department because our professors and our students, actually, as well, the sociology majors, are much more diverse in every sense of the word, ethnically and racially and in terms of national origin, background, and just life experience than a lot of the other departments in the university, for whatever reason that may be. And so I think that I was really privileged to have a great diversity of professors.
So you found that exciting rather than scary?
I did. I did.
But you were able to express your own feelings in that diversity.
I feel like I was. I feel like I was, and yeah, again, maybe more because of where I'm coming from, or maybe because I'm have been given a sense of bravery and courage in my own voice, in my own words, that I feel like I was able to thrive in that environment.
I know one of my fondest experiences was actually also with the sociology department in Sociology 100. You make a roadmap of who you are, and, you know, it really ties you to yourself. So I understand that sociology brings that out. I think that's great. I enjoyed it so much.
Now, what about from your peers? You've been influenced by professors, of course, but I know college students also are learning a lot from people that they're around. What's that experience been like?
They are. I think that, and just to go on and on about the sociology department and how wonderful it is, I think I've actually also learned a lot from my colleagues in the sociology department. I sit in classes and I'm just consistently impressed with how intelligent and thoughtful our fellow students are. But the thing I've always been most impressed with fellow students is their ability to open up and to allow themselves to learn new things and to allow themselves to listen to voices that, you know, may not be agreeing with them or may not be saying something that necessarily fits with their own roadmap at that point in time or their own sense of what's right or true in the world. And I think it's really difficult to do. And I think that there's a lot in our society that says or maybe says things about students, you know, being hard-headed or, you know, not thinking they know knowing everything and really not knowing anything. And I think that sometimes can be a very harsh critique. I think I see, obviously that happens sometimes, but I think I also see a lot of students that are very willing to open up and to allow a lot of new information that might challenge their whole entire worldview and sort of shake the ground under their feet, let that kind of information in, and that's really impressive when you can do that.
Ashley, what about your experience with peers?
With peers, well, I think just to speak to what Rachel said, when we stand on the quad on quad day and we tell people, you know, every 10 minutes somebody is brought into the U.S. in human trafficking, slavery still exists, they stop. Listen.
Yeah.
I've been really impressed with that. That's something I didn't necessarily expect the first time I went out there and set up the table, but you've really learned a lot. And with peers and classes in general, the questions that you get.
It says a lot about young people today, too. I think maybe that's another point is that, you know, people say that they talk about the apathetic generation or generation, I think, are we Generation X, I think, or whatever, things that they say about us not caring or not being involved the way that maybe some past generations were. And I would really refute that very strongly. I think that exactly as Ashley had mentioned, her experience staying on the quad and you know, we'll stay on the quad and we'll flyer about events and we'll try to say out loud the issues that we're concerned with. And with women's, I know with myself doing a lot of work on violence against women, people hear the message that you're talking about and they stop. And they've got a zillion things to do and they've got a zillion things on their mind, like anybody does. And they'll stop and they'll turn around and they'll come back to you and they'll say, oh, what, this is, I care about this. This is important to me. It's important to me to see that violence against women to stop. It's important to me to see sex trafficking addressed. And I think that says a lot about our generation.
And I think a big part of it, too, is a lot of people do care, but they're not sure how to care. They're like, I care about this. I don't want this to happen, but how do I stop it? And I think that's a big challenge of being a quote-unquote progressive organization. You have to connect the dots. You have to say, you see this as a concern. Change your behavior in this way. I mean, you know, I walk into the Y and I see recycling bins, and it's always a reminder to fill mine up and take it to the recycling center. I think the hardest part's been making a recycling bin for these abstract ideas. And
I love the words that you use, actually, Ashley. It's a responsibility of progressive organizations. It's a responsibility of organizers, not only to try to improve your own ability to work on a campus, but to show other people, and that's true organizing, what their power is to change problems like the ones that we've been discussing here today.
What about the response of male students? It seems to me that a lot of the organizations have female leadership at this point. Is there a problem with male students getting the visions, seeing the need, doing something about it?
I don't think so, actually. And two of the crucial members in the Women's Committee on Amnesty International, Ron and Mike Cruz, who are both male students, have both been instrumental in bringing together the Stop Violence Against Women activist conference that we just had a few weeks ago. And we're just as dedicated, if not more so, than our female students. And so that's impressive to me as well, and it says a lot to me. But I definitely think that male students are equally as concerned as female students, maybe not always told that they're supposed to be. But definitely involved. And a lot of the workshop leaders at the conference were also men, and some of the attendees also men. And I think that's that really says a lot about maybe at least about them personally, if not about men in general.
Yeah. I think they kind of have a tough situation, especially coming to our group. They care. They want to help. But there's a lot of girls. And I think that maybe offering a more social aspect, like I think it's wonderful that there are men involved in the different groups and organizing things for Amnesty, and it gives them also a social base. I think that's an important part, just feeling comfortable in an organization. But definitely I feel like they care the same amount. I've seen the same amount of support.
And not to say that we shouldn't put the pressure off of men, just that we shouldn't put the pressure off of anybody, but I should say that
While you're thinking of that, I was just noticing last week, as an aside, that at an event where we had a lot of food, there were more males there.
Yeah, well, that I think that the, if you're talking about the
college kids as a whole, if you put out some pizza,
college kids as a whole, I think come more to get food. But what I was going to say is that I think that when we talk about touchy and personal issues, because with issues like this, the political is personal.
Sure.
I think that we sometimes have this dialogue, or we sometimes have this message, whether intentionally or not, that if you're not directly, quote, affected by the issue, you're not allowed to say your two cents about, you know,
sure,
what the problem is. And I think that's a message that men unfortunately receive a lot about, you know, quote, women's issues. And I think that that's not true. I think men, although they need to, I think, listen to women's voices when we're talking about women's issues, are not by any means excluded from the conversation. And that goes for not only women's rights and women's issues, but also any issue that you're working on that's both political and personal. I think on one hand, we definitely need to listen to the voices, as I had discussed earlier, of the people that are directly involved. But I think that everybody's voice matters in very crucial and important debates like that, as long as those voices are brought to the table and are willing to be respectful.
We're down to about our last 10 minutes of the program. You're listening to Keeping the Faith here on AM 580 WILL. If you'd like to join the conversation with our two guests today, do give us a call. 333-9455 is the local number for Champaign-Urbana listeners. If it's a long-distance call, use our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. Tell me what this last week of school is going to be like for each of you. How many exams do you have?
I've been writing papers, I feel like, since I woke up a couple weeks ago. Lots of papers, a couple more finals, and on my way.
I've just got one final, actually, left in Professor Carmen's constitutional law class. I'm excited about that, actually. But I've just got one left and getting ready to move.
And what are your plans after graduation?
Well, I'm moving to Chicago, actually, and I'll be enrolled at DePaul College of Law in August.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes?
And after graduation, I'll be going over to Europe for a business immersion program. And after that, I return home to Chicago to be a free agent.
What does a free agent mean?
It means that I live at home and apply for a lot of jobs.
I see. Okay. We have another caller. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes, I'm in hospice, and I've noticed there are many more women than men. And this is the issue, I think, is how to get more men involved. Because obviously I'm a woman, but I had a father and a brother. And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
So her experience was that there were more volunteers in hospice program that were female than male.
I actually, not a sociology major, but I think that a big part of it is represented in our society and our culture of what men think they should be and who they think they should be. And as far as breaking that and defining that, I think it's a bigger burden than I think anyone can carry alone. I know probably my best solution to it would be to make the issue more present to men, to perhaps sponsor our events or co-sponsor or advertise more directly with fraternities or other social networks that may involve men. I'm not sure how I would actually go about breaking down the social expectations, but I think that the more you put it out there, the more you'll have come back. So I would just say overall increased advertising, I would guess, and just more grassroots. I don't want to use recruiting because we don't do that, but to increase volunteerism would be to increase awareness of the issue, would be my first thought.
Mm-hmm. And just keeping it an open dialogue, I think, as well, which I'd commented earlier. I think, was the question also about people who volunteer at
yes.
hospice? I think part of that, and this doesn't necessarily have to do directly with the work that Ashley and I are engaged in, but that we expect women in our society to take on a lot of roles that require a lot of emotional labor, and that's partly because we don't value that type of labor as much in our society as we do other types of quote masculine labor. So that may be a separate reason, but maybe part of the reason that we're seeing a lot of volunteers in hospice and in child care and other types of labor that requires a lot of emotional labor is usually women.
What do you see coming up in the future for your two organizations? Why don't we start with Amnesty? What are some of the issues that Amnesty will be dealing with in the next year or so?
Hopefully next year, and I think that this will be and should be very much open to the students that join us next year. But I hope that they will continue working on women's rights. That's personally one of the issues that I'm very much concerned about. Unfortunately, the conflict in Darfur is very likely to still be going on at that time. We do have a committee with Amnesty that's devoted to working to end the conflict in Darfur, and so they will probably still be working on that issue, raising awareness about it. I know just recently they actually had a ultimate Frisbee-a-thon. They raised $400 that they sent to the UN World Food Program to help with that issue, so they may be doing more of that. And just whatever, hopefully we'll once again keep our ear to the ground and take up the most current and pressing issues.
And what about the near future for Libertas?
For Libertas next year, we would definitely like to have another speaker join us on campus. We think that was an excellent event. We're going to be working extra overtime hard to increase our membership and working forward to that. We're also looking forward to supporting our other student groups with their endeavors and hopefully having them help out a little with ours. So,
now in your personal future, you're going to be in Europe. Where will you be?
We're traveling through Belgium, Hungary, and the Netherlands, and we're going to be visiting from farms to grain processing to finished products, so a lot of different stops.
And what are you trying to accomplish or learn?
My team's actual research area is about political policies regarding agricultural trade in the EU. So we've been looking at it from the point of World War II, when there really wasn't any food to be had, and how that influences today.
And Rachel, in your immediate personal future, you're going to be in law school. What kind of law do you hope to specialize in?
I think broadly, I'm definitely going to go into public interest and interested in doing international human rights. I haven't decided exactly what I want to do yet, but I'm a little bit interested in doing something in labor rights and also in reproductive rights law. So maybe one of those two fields specifically I'll probably end up in, hopefully.
Now, international human rights law is, of course, a very important subject, but it doesn't pay very well.
That's
why,
true.
Why would you make a choice like that?
Well, when I thought about what I really wanted from life, I will never be able to buy a job that I'm passionate for. And I think that's the most valuable thing to me to achieve in this life is a job that I wake up every morning and just can't wait to get there and can't wait to get working. And I just, you know, a job where it hardly even feels like life. It just feels like breathing. And that's what I want more than anything else.
But let me push just a little bit. It's expensive to go to law school. You may have to, I don't know your personal situation at all, but you might have to
very much so
be having to get loans to go to law school.
Oh, and I will,
if you're only going to be getting paid at the very bottom of the scale for attorneys, will you ever be able to pay those loans off?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, hopefully. I've actually been very lucky in that DePaul Law School has offered me a very generous scholarship.
Partly because of what you're choosing to specialize in?
It was called a merit scholarship, although it was perhaps and hopefully partly influenced by my choice of career fields. DePaul Law does have a history of supporting human rights and supporting work in public interest, so probably also partly because of what I chose to do. And they also actually have a loan repayment program for folks that go into public interest to help them pay off their loan. So it's in the end, where that money comes from is actually other lawyers. So it's saying that even lawyers who go into the kind of work that perhaps pays better and is not considered public interest are paying into programs like this so that lawyers, law students and also lawyers that go into work that doesn't pay as well, they're supporting the work of lawyers like us.
So the entire field, including corporate lawyers, might be
I'm sure there's some
to some extent.
Yeah, we'll be contributing. Yeah, I'm sure there's some individuals that are much more generous than others, but that's essentially where it comes from.
And did your family have any hesitation when you announced to them your choice of specialty, or did they?
Since during my course of high school and college, I've announced different career fields several different times, and I've been very lucky that I've maybe sometimes surprised them, but certainly never had a look of doubt that I wasn't able to do it, and always been encouraged in every choice that I've made, no matter how far out it might or expensive in the case of law school it might sound, always been supported in all of my choices. So.
And Ashley, since after you come back from Europe, you're still going to be looking for a position.
Yes.
What types of things might appeal to you?
I'm actually really looking forward to finding a career where I can work with people. And while I would like that to be helping people, I'm interested in maybe continuing work in human trafficking, of course, in the Chicagoland area. Really, when I chose my academic majors, I chose international studies because I wanted to travel and I wanted to learn how to know people, which is a really awkward phrase, but culturally. And hopefully I can move on with that and find a very dynamic environment in which to do it.
And having the language skills in addition helps a lot.
Yes, yes. I've been working hard for that. So,
our guests on Keeping the Faith today have been Rachel White Domain, representing Amnesty International, and Ashley Moore, representing Libertas. These are two programs that are registered student organizations at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign, and also are both programs of the University YMCA. Thank you for being our guest today, particularly with the pressures of exams and
thank
final projects and papers.
Yes,
thank you so much.
Very glad to have you here. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, our guest will be Amy Wolf, and she'll be talking about a recent trip she took to Israel as part of the Birthright Israel program. On May 20th, our guests will be Rachel Dekas and Nikki Kahn, talking about the Coalition of Campus-Wide conference that they'll both be returning from. And on May 27th, our guest will be Professor Bill Cagle of Millikan University. He'll be talking about the myth of U.S. Christian foundations. That'll be May 27th with Professor Bill Cagle from Millikan University. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'm the director of the University Y on this campus. And one of our big programs starts tomorrow, the Collection for Dump and Run, where we'll be receiving all kinds of things brought to the Y at 1001 South Wright Street. If you have furniture, household goods, anything that students next fall would find helpful in setting up their apartment or their dorm rooms, particularly international students who might arrive with just two suitcases and need to furnish an apartment, do donate it to the Y if it's extra for you. Particularly students who are leaving campus at this time of year, bring things by the Y or put them into large cardboard containers all around campus with the big green signs on them saying dump and run. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Uncovering the real story in Iraq is getting harder. Western journalists have become targets like American soldiers, and reporters now take elaborate precautions to avoid being killed or kidnapped. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk about the hazards of war reporting with George Packer, a staff writer for The New Yorker. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. When you carpool with us, you share the ride with authors, artists, newsmakers, and more. Your financial support fuels the journey. We're working on a $2.1 million goal for WILL Radio and TV, and the fuel gauge shows our tank is 65% full. Check our progress and help power the programs you value with a contribution online at willpledge.org. Thanks.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s and southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour during the evening. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-70s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.